Hi, I'm Lynn McFarland from The Growing Season. A friend dug a hole in the garden and filled it with water. I think he meant well. Shovel along with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're shoveling. This is The Growing Season. I'm Matt McFarland, as I am every single week. And speaking of every single week, I'm pleased to be joined around the wheelbarrow by Jack McFarland and his wife, Lynn. But to me, they are mom and dad. To my left-hand mom, Lynn McFarland. Mom, how are you?
I'm doing just fine.
Father?
Beyond wonderful, Matthew.
Oh, not only is he wonderful, he's beyond wonderful.
That's good.
That's a fantastic thing. We are continuing to celebrate spring here on The Growing Season. This would be part three of our ongoing series, celebrating the season that allows you to get out and get dirty. Yes?
Yeah.
And get nice and dirty.
Yeah.
There have been some wonderful developments for the Growing Season team here, which we will chat about on the other side. But this week, ladies and gentlemen, mom and dad, what are we chatting about?
We're going to be chatting about everything to do with pruning, Matthew.
Okay, so we've made allusions. We did a show called Dormancy Pruning. This was a little while back, wherein we chat about the fact that you probably shouldn't be doing a whole heck of a lot of pruning right now. But now we're getting into it. Now with the temperatures sort of being consistent, and it's that lovely 10 degrees Celsius over the course of 7 days, or at least approaching that, you can then get into some of the pruning. We're going to get into some of the finer details with regards to pruning, all that much more. And guys, is there there's a part four to this, yes, to this series?
Yeah, we're going to do edibles. I think with the way everything is in the world right now, Matt, and the cost of, say, produce in your stores, I thought we should teach you how to increase your yield.
Okay, and is there a part five?
No, not as of yet.
No, not as of yet.
Nope. But ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned, because what's going to happen is things happen quick here at the Growing Season HQ. Okay, yeah. Spring pruning. This is celebrating spring. That's why it's in the spring. That's why we're doing pruning in the spring. This is The Growing Season, brought to you by GrowingSeasonCanada.com. All one word. Get out your Felcos, because that's the only secateurs you should be using. Stay with us. Let's get ready to shovel! This is The Growing Season, brought to you by GrowingSeasonCanada.com. Directly after the show airs, you should click on Listen and Watch. And we'll talk about why watching is so much more important these days. And you can hear this show in its entirety, plus all of our back catalog. And as we do every single week, the princess, the little lady, please bring us in. Okay, so listen and watch, ladies and gents. Sorry, Emily, thanks for bringing us in. You are the most beautiful.
Love you, Emily.
You are the best part of me, little girl. The watch section, you've heard over the past couple weeks that The Growing Season has now expanded its breadth and scope to television. So we recently did our first series of televised live hits for the Weather Network. Many thanks to Mark Robinson. Many thanks to Kyle Bryden. And many thanks to Victoria Fenn Alvarado of the Weather Network for helping to make this happen. And we came away with some observations. So firstly, The Growing Season is sort of akin to coming home from work, taking your pants off. You get to walk around the living room in your boxer shorts. You might have a drink.
I don't wear boxer shorts, Matt.
Okay.
Okay.
Watch some TV, whatever. You're just nice and free.
We is that like on a need to know basis?
Then? Here, can we focus, you dirtbags? Can we do that? Okay. We like to take the long way around. On radio, you get 54 minutes to sort of stretch out, right? You kick your feet up on the coffee table. Dad's wearing his disgusting European Speedo, whatever it is. Okay?
Yeah.
Whereas on television, especially when it's live, and ladies and gentlemen, what this means is, like, there's no takebacks. If you mess it up, you mess it up. There's no editing. And so you go live to air. So what we did with the Weather Network was we took part in their GTA segments in the morning, and we had all of like 1 minute and 15 seconds to get in, get out, be funny, be humorous, be informative, be affable, be all these wonderful adjectives for a human. And man, you have to quicken the pace. Yes?
And here's something else, Matthew. We did it all in a blizzard.
Yeah. We did it in a blizzard.
wasn't quite a blizzard, but yeah, it was pretty
cold. So on top of not being able to take your pants off and walk around the house free, because you can't do that when you're in a blizzard or on live TV, we also had to make sure that we got the topics that were necessary to have covered very, very quickly. Yes?
Yeah. Yes.
Awesome. Okay. This week we're chatting about spring pruning. You can do this. Again, remember the rule here. You heard me mention it on the intro. I'm going to mention it again because it bears repeating. 10 degrees Celsius during the daytime over the course of 7 days is when you're in your it's okay to do stuff zone. And actually, in fact, we're going to be chatting with Victoria Fenn Alvarado from the Weather Network about soil temperatures. And, you know, you shouldn't be planting unless it is roughly in the soil temperature is roughly in this like 16 to 18 degrees. Well, again, when the air temperature is 5, the soil temperature is going to be sort of reflective of that. Yes?
Yeah. Yes.
And this actually affects you guys and girls. People. If you've received hydrangeas for Easter. Yes?
Yeah.
If you've received hydrangeas for Easter, I have clients that would text me and say, well, can I plant these outside right now?
Well, they're using all those.
Even an Easter lily, too.
Yeah, so they're using, what is it? All the hydrangea macrophylla, right?
Yeah.
But there's your Latin alert, actually.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so guys, we didn't necessarily intend to get into talking about soil temperature here, but let's actually get into talking about this. Look, we've all seen these videos, maybe on the Weather Network, in January, where you get these freaks that are deciding that it is a smart thing to jump into a frozen lake, right?
Polar bear plunge
or whatever they call this, right?
No chance.
Absolutely not happening on my end. But the point is that you jump into these areas, and that some report, they say that it's like 1,000 knives stabbing you all at once. And the idea here
is I felt it, Matthew.
You put on your disgusting European Speedo and jumped into the lake?
I fell through the ice bat in the middle of winter.
And how did it feel?
It felt like
1,000 knives stabbing you all at once?
Do you know what? Hearing your heartbeat underwater. So you're under the water and you hear this.
That's a good impression, by the way. Yeah, that's fantastic. So I don't need to pay for that sound effect. We just get Dad to do it. Dad, do it again! Okay.
More heartbeat.
That's fantastic, man. Good for you. Wow, there's your superpower. Okay, so the point here... The point is that this is very much akin to what would happen if you take your hydrangea macrophylla that you received for Easter that has been grown in a greenhouse and actually forced to bloom at this time because they don't naturally... You don't see hydrangeas blooming in late March, early April.
It just doesn't happen,
right?
Yeah.
So you don't see that. And so they've been forced. And then if you take this outside and plant it in air temperature that is, let's say, between 5 and 10 degrees Celsius, as well as soil temperature that would be roughly in the same region, you're going to shock the snot out of these poor things.
Also, you must leave it in the pot, listeners, in the meantime. So when you do start moving it in and out, make sure you leave that in the pot and then transfer it into the ground when the conditions are right.
So I have a meat thermometer. I have a probe thermometer that I use. Now, you can get what they call soil thermometers, and it not only does it test the soil's temperature, it tests its pH, it tests the humidity, and whatever.
But how does it test the pH?
I don't know.
I'm just curious.
I'm just a radio guy, man. I have no idea. Whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay? But the point is that you would be able to take this probe thermometer and stick it in the ground, and if it says 5 degrees Celsius, guess what? You don't want to be putting that hydrangea in there.
No.
As well as, while we're on this, my dad made a slight allusion to it, but here I am again, taking the pants off, walking around in boxer shorts, taking a long way around. You can't just bring your hydrangea outside and plant it.
Nope.
This is not how this goes. It needs field trips. Mom, explain the field trips.
Well, it needs to be acclimated. So what it needs to do is you need to put it outside, maybe for a few hours each day. After a few days, expand the daylight hours it's outside, but always bring it in at night. And I would say safely after a week of doing this, am I right, guys?
Yeah.
You can plant it outside. It's acclimating it.
And man,
also feel the soil temperature. So if you don't have this magic meat thermometer, just take your and put your finger down to the first knuckle. And if it feels cold to the touch, it's too cold.
Yeah, I agree. Get the meat thermometer.
Yeah. Get a dedicated meat thermometer.
Yeah. Because the world needs more gadgets. But the point here is, Mom, first of all, for you to say that, man, you're succinct, as well as one thing that Mom didn't mention is don't put it outside in full sun. Why, Mom?
Well, it's a hydrangea. It's not used to full sun. They like moist soil.
Any anything that you are trying to acclimate, you can't put it into full sun.
Oh, okay.
Because you're going to, regardless if it's a full sun, you're shocking it, right? Yeah. So if you have that.
Back into the conditions that it's used to.
Well, but even if you're bringing out, let's say you've been growing portulaca indoors, mm-hmm. which is a full sun, blasting sun annual. If you, the instant you begin to what they call harden off, where is this field trip? All right, Jimmy, Bobby, and Jill, we're gonna get on a school bus and we're gonna go to Hilton Falls and see the waterfall, right? It's a field trip. You would take your portulaca in their cell packs, put them outside in a shady location on the back deck. Because, Mom, you don't want to acclimate this thing to more than one thing at a time, right?
Wait a minute.
Now we're acclimating it to air temperature.
Yeah.
But you don't want to be scorching these things. You're going to sunburn the poor thing.
Yeah, it's going to be too much shock for them.
Fantastic segue, Matt.
Always, I know.
So, Matt, here's something. So you grew this wonderful portulaca indoors.
Yep.
And you took it outside, not understanding the necessary light needs of this plant.
Yeah.
What would happen if you took this portulaca and you stuck it in a...
Stuck it is not a word.
It. Put it in a shade environment where it's not meant to be.
Now, hold on a second, Mom, before you answer that. And I am going to let you answer this, actually. That would never happen.
For you?
No.
Why?
It's unacceptable that that happens in this era. Why?
The internet. Read the packages.
Yes, it's unacceptable, right? Yeah. But anyway, Mom, answer it. What's going to happen?
Well, in a shade situation, that portulaca is not going to bloom.
So, ladies and gentlemen, if you
stuck it.
It's a new word.
If you stuck it. This portulaca, man. I like stooking things. I stook things here. I stook things there. But if you stook this portulaca in the shade, what's going to end up happening is it is going to not thrive. There will be failure to thrive. These things are dependent on a certain amount of sunlight. And here's one of the most interesting little adaptations. Mom, hydrangea. How big are the leaves?
They're really big.
Why?
And they're thin. Because they're basically a shade plant, aren't they? So the leaves need to be big to get all that solar energy.
I don't know
about the thinness quite why that's involved, but probably too for collecting the solar energy to make food.
The other thing too is your hosta. Look at the size of the leaves on these things. And
too.
The reason is when you are a shade growing organism, if somebody has stuck you in the shade.
Stuck it.
As a shade-growing organism, you need larger solar panels to absorb less sunlight. If you take this portulaca and you stuck it in the shade, it's got little tiny leaves. It's going to die because it's adapted to having so much sun that its leaves are smaller. Now you stuck it in the shade and the leaves are smaller. It's getting even less sunlight. Yes?
Okay, one other thing. The growth pattern is going to change on that plant. What is going to happen? It's going to become long and spindly, looking for more light because it wants lunch. And on top of that, Matt, it'll start to droop. It'll do all these other things because it's missing certain things in the environment.
Yep, I agree.
Anyway.
So be careful where you stuck things.
Stuck it. Moving on to our pruning show. Okay, Mom, this is for you. I was going to give this to Matt, but I thought I would put a wrench in the mix. Before you would even start pruning in the spring, first thing, what are we going to do first?
You're going to take the clothes off your shrubs.
Huh?
Clothes. Remove the winter protection. Get them out of their snowsuits.
So the shrubs are taking the long way around.
Yes.
They're coming home, taking their pants off, walking around in boxer shorts, stooking things places.
Yeah. If you've wrapped them in burlap for protecting them over the winter, you need to take that off because if you don't, the weather turns warm, especially quickly, you're basically going to microwave your shrubs.
Now, Mother.
Yes.
This is something that we need to chat about. On the list of things that clients get very excited about in and around this time of year is removing the plant's sweater.
Mm-hmm.
But we have seen over the last couple weeks that Mother Nature is a capricious beast. And sometimes we can go from 15 degrees one week to the next week, 10 centimeters of snow and minus 15. Yes?
Yeah.
So that is why don't get yourself so excited about taking off your plant's winter sweater, because we know that at this time of the year, for goodness sakes, I was on a major, major build. This is in the early millennium, and we got a snowstorm that shut us down for a week on April 11th.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Wait till you get your 7 days of 10 degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
Consecutive. The other thing is tune into the weather network. Look at the long range forecast.
Absolutely. And you know what? There's no excuse to not know what the temperature is going to be tomorrow. Everybody has a supercomputer built into their pocket. Right?
Yeah.
Or their purse.
Yeah.
I mean, I know in my purse.
Stuck it.
I have my supercomputer. Like you have the ability to be able to track the weather on an hourly basis. Now, remember when you used to have to look at the radar? I think it's going to be coming. It looks like around whatever, 3 p.m. they're saying.
Yeah.
Now, on your app, you can track it like almost by the minute.
Yeah. 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 So along comes the spring, which it is now, basically. And you have all these stakes that you have put on the trees and so forth to keep them from blowing over in the wind, okay?
I always add garlic to my stakes.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah,
and so,
good.
Matt,
garlic's good.
When you put the wires and hose around the tree, and I know there's this new method of staking your trees. By the way, I think it's ugly. But anyways, Matt, you come along and that stake and so forth has been on the tree as well as the wire and hose has been around the trunk. What happens if you leave it on too long?
The wire and hose?
Yes.
All right. So, think about it like this. You know how you've just come out of the winter, you probably put on the winter five.
Yeah.
You go to put the belt on and you're like, oh, well, I mean, this doesn't fit how it fit in September.
Yeah.
That's not good. And you're sort of clenched and clamped and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
This is what happens with trees that have the wire and hose and stakes on it for too long. Now, here is the big key here. When I go and I stake a tree, when I make the loop with my wire and hose, I also allow for room so that this loop is not super tight. The tree has room to move around. What you don't want to do is you don't want to be staking and wiring specifically your tree so tightly that if a stiff breeze comes along, it actually snaps the tree off above where you've staked it.
Have you ever seen that, Matthew?
I've seen that happen.
Oh, I've had it happen.
Yeah. So you want to allow for movement. So here's what happens. You know what? I'm going to throw the science alert up here because we haven't put this up for a while, and this is on me. So normally I get on my dad about it because he's like, gibberellins and flanargan assays in the leaves of the chiffonar. And you're like, oh, whatever.
Florigen, too. But can't forget that one.
This is a disclaimer from the growing season. This week's show has enough science to have its own postal code. Please send all science-related questions to Too Much Science, care of the growing season, Bolton, Ontario, Canada. The point is that what happens is you actually physically want your younger tree to be swaying in the breeze a bit. Here's why. Let's say you have a tree and you have a breeze that is blowing eastward. So the tree is moving to one side. What ends up happening is there's a hormone that causes the tree to grow a little bit more on the side that it's leaning. And then let's say you have a breeze that is blowing westward this way. Then you have this hormone that kicks in that's allowing the tree to grow a little bit more on the other side. And this back and forth and back and forth. Ladies and gentlemen, this is how your tree gets taller. Okay?
No.
Yes, this came from right from Ian Bruce in my arboriculture program.
Okay, fine. So let's just say that you're in forestry, okay?
Yeah.
And here's a forest full of trees. I don't know, pick any tree you want. Let's say it's full of maples, okay?
Yeah.
All right, so along comes winter or summer or there's a heavy wind or anything. So here we are going out with our secateurs, our pruning shears, whatever. And we're pruning accordingly. But what happens in the wild? Do those trees literally prune themselves, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, how?
Well, again, if it's a tight-packed tree, if you have damage, eventually that dead branch, let's say, is swaying in the breeze, it blows up against another tree, it would snap it off, yes?
Partly. Or what would happen, Matthew, is that the tree itself would kick off the bottommost branches. Okay?
Okay.
So that allows that tree to grow taller because it has less room to grow. But if you're growing the same tree on your property, let's say we're in the Bolton area, and it's in an open area, it has all the room to grow. And here we come along, we said, oh, this tree is lopsided. We got too much growth to one side or the other. So along comes TGS, the growing season, and we prune that sucker, right?
Yes. Yeah. Which is okay. This is giving us work.
Yeah.
I'll take it. Okay. So the ins and outs, nuts and bolts of spring pruning, is that where this is headed?
Sure. Okay. So Matthew, number one, can you literally kill a tree or harm a tree through the act of pruning?
What time of year?
No, let's not do summer. That's tricky.
Okay.
So let's say now.
Yes.
How?
Okay. So you would have emerging leaves coming in, or you've got bud swell or whatever. This is sort of across the board thing. What ends up happening is the number one thing that a plant needs is the ability to absorb sunlight and take that sunlight and through a process called photosynthesis, create glucose or a sugar within it. And it's creating its own food. Well, if you prune this thing back to the point that it cannot create its own food, you're removing a significant amount of leaf coverage, this plant starves to death.
Not just that, Matthew. Sometimes by removing too much of its normal food item, like the leaves and so forth, that's also there to help cool the tree. It's also there to help protect against disease and insects because, you know, too much of a good thing, the insect moves along. And remember, number one rule, number one rule when it comes to insects concerning plants is what?
Don't stook it in places where it's not supposed to be stook.
Mum.
They go after the plants that are sick.
Got it. So if you yes, a sickly plant.
Yeah, you know what, Mum? What's the little limerick?
I'm not sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
Okay, I will take the reins. Your plant is not sick because it's being attacked by insects. It's being attacked by insects because it's sick. Yes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is
a
weird.
Sick plant tastes better to invasive organisms. It tastes better to eat that than if your plant was in tip-top shape health-wise.
Yeah.
Weird.
Okay, so Matt, this time of the year, we're going along and we have a very great view of what is going on with that plant. We are seeing if it has disease when we move that. We're also noticing basically on the tips of, say, your evergreens, it could be a little bit of browning from the winter. And with this cold weather that we had in the past, Matt, we had a lot of damage to the various plants, especially after bud swell. Explain, Mom.
Well, bud swell is when the buds are just starting to swell up.
Nope. That's where your neighbor Bud has been eating way too many peanuts and drinking too much beer over the winter.
Okay, and then he's got more than the winter five.
He's swelled.
Oh, he's swelled.
So, Mom, you're right on the same track. Okay, so let's say we had this bud swell. We had that cold weather. What would happen if that bud swell had progressed to a point where the leaves are just about ready to form? How much damage are we going to do to that plant over
the
season?
Wouldn't the sudden cold weather actually kill the leaves? It would freeze them. They're very tender, too, when they first pop out.
So, Matt, if you notice on a bud, okay, so when you're looking at the bud on a tree or on a plant, what happens is there's a little sheath covering it, and generally it could be brown or gray or whatever. But during that cold period, Matt, if that tree had already been out to a certain point, you'll see a lot of green working its way through. So what happens is you're going to get burn or burning on that plant, especially in the areas that have a northwest exposure. Explain, Maddie.
Okay, so a northwest exposure is an area that Coppertone needs to market to. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
So
that's terrible.
Here's what ends up happening is that when you've got these brand new buds, whether it be on a tree, whether it be on a, even your emerging, what do they call them? Your ephemerals, your spring bulbs that are coming up.
Geophytes.
Okay. Anything that's emerging in the spring. We talked about this, Mom, about taking your hydrangea out and putting it in full sun. It's not used to this. It's the same thing that happens with these emerging flower buds, emerging leaf buds. They're not used to this intensity of the sun. And if they're in an area that is northwest facing where you have very, very bright light, this can actually burn off or scorch emerging leaf buds, emerging flower buds, even the leaves on your bulbs. Mom.
Also the cold winds too. If the wind,
that's the problem. The wind chill factor, right, Mom? So Mom, you're there and you see the tree and it's sitting there and you happen to notice there's a lot of thin branches coming up from the very bottom of the tree, and that's called suckering. Okay, so suckering occurs why, Mom?
Isn't suckering occurring because of damage to the tree, maybe being hit by weed eaters, like when you're trimming the lawn and stuff like that?
Or the genetic material for that particular plant, and let's say you've done a new version of, say, your malice or whatever else.
Also, you're talking about the rootstock.
The rootstock is weak, and that could be another reason. So now here we go along. We're removing all these broken, discolored branches before the leaves form. We're trying to avoid touching evergreens because it's too soon. You want to only do that when they're in active growth pattern, okay? You can remove any bit of burn that has happened over the winter. You're doing your thing. You're removing crossers and rubbers. Yes, Mom.
Well, back to the suckers. You want to remove those.
Why?
They really amount to nothing, and they steal energy from the tree.
Perfect. Now, here's the thing, though. Suckering is somewhat of an indication as to the condition of the tree. Like, if you're seeing massive levels of suckering, this also might be an indication that its health is on the decline. Is that correct, Dad?
Yeah, like everything
has a cry for help.
Everything has a shelf life. You have a tree that is on the older side, or it's really starting to look sad. Can you do anything to get this tree to survive a little bit longer?
All that. I'm going to get that answer to you immediately on the other side. This is The Growing Season, brought to you by GrowingSeasonCanada.com. On the other side, what can you do if it's old and gross? Stay with us.
Hi, this is Lynn from The Growing Season, brought to you by GrowingSeasonCanada.com. Remember to take those snowsuits off the shrubs in the spring.
I got to tell you about the snowsuit. Oh, sorry. You know what? Push the pin in that for a second. Thanks, Mom. First of all, thanks, Mom.
Push the pin into it?
Well, I'm just going to hold up. We're just going to put a pin in that. I'm going to come back to the snowsuit thing. Hold on one second. Okay? After the show airs, you can go to that website, GrowingSeasonCanada.com. Click on Listen and Watch. Lets you hear this show in its entirety. Plus, take part in the watch section. Scroll down. Our segments, our last year's segments for the Weather Network are there. The instant I get some links to post on the watch part, I will make sure that you can access them on our website so that you can see myself, my lovely mother, and my super handsome yet long-winded father on the Weather Network. Speaking of pushing a pin in it, let's pull the pin out. The snowsuit. I got to tell you something. Who makes snowsuits? Let's say Columbia.
Yeah, because that's the one that came to mind.
Falco does not make snowsuits.
No.
Although they should. Okay. Columbia should also begin to market super absorption when it comes to the interior of snow pants. Because let me tell you, man, Mom, having kids, sometimes you can't get them out of the snow pants fast enough.
Oh, yes, I know.
And they got to, it's crazy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And they got to go to the washroom.
And they get really embarrassed.
They get really embarrassed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, my son's in grade 5. We're starting to get trend into the don't want to wear snow pants at all phase of his existence.
Wait till grade 6. He won't wear snow
grade
pants.
Grade 6, he's done? That's it. That's the cutoff, huh?
Yeah. It seems to be the cutoff.
Maddie.
What?
So can we please tell me what you should do on an older shrub if you really want to help me rejuvenate them.
So in grade 6, Mom, he's not going to want to wear snow.
Oh,
okay, all right, please. All right, all right. good Lord. Okay, no, this all has to, listen, my son gets to a time in his life where he needs to have a haircut, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get to a certain age where you got to have a haircut.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to give this, pick me a shrub, Dad. Stop rolling your eyes at me. Don't be such a poop.
Potentilla Fruticosa Ferrari.
All right. I love the Ferrari part. By the way, the only color that a Ferrari should come in is red. That's all I'll say about that. Okay.
By the way, that's a Potentilla, everybody.
That's a Potentilla, yeah. Yes. Or a Bushy Cinquefoil, which is a stupid name. It's a
Potentilla. Gold drop.
Yeah.
Cinquefoil.
Okay. Here's what it is. Shrubs get to a certain age where they have more wood than leaf. We're going to leave that there.
Thank
Shut
you.
Up, Dad. Okay. You'll see this, right? You see this shrub in full tilt boogie in the summer, and you're like, you know, 5 years ago, that thing, there was way more leaf. And on a Potentilla, what you're kind of going for is this round green ball. But sometimes they get to an age.
Wait a minute. There. 1 minute. We'll let you continue.
Yeah.
Don't turn all your shrubs in your garden into round green balls, Blue.
Well,
I like them a little more natural.
If you're going for if your garden's formal, Potentillas work well because they maintain that shape, okay? They also, it's better than the, everybody goes for the boxwood now, and boxwood doesn't even flower, as well as the box moth is going to make that a real interesting one to specify, right? Okay, so the point is that you look at your Potentilla, and you can see there's it's called Woody. Like, you can, it's from Toy Story. You can see that it's got a lot of just branches that have no leaves on it. What you can do with this right at this time of the year is something called coppicing. Or if you want to bring that into a bit more of a modern speak, modern prose or parlance, a hard reset prune. So what happens is you could literally hard prune that shrub to about 18 inches off the ground. And what ends up happening is this then creates a rapid stress response wherein it puts on a votive of brand new growth, and all of that wood that was not having any leaf on it is now gone. Yes?
Yeah, and what will happen, listeners, is that you're going to end up having a lot of accelerated growth this year. You will have very little flower because you've cut it very far back. But in the end, what you're going to get is you're going to get this plant to probably survive another 50% of its normal age. So if it's a Potentilla, it might be 15, 18 years in your garden, and you can give it another decade, let's say. So it's worth it. Yes, Lynn.
Well, something I want to add. Okay, the weather's gotten nice. You're excited to get out there and prune. Watch pruning your early bloomers.
Why?
Because you could be cutting the blooms off. This would apply to forsythia, rhododendrons, azaleas, daphnes.
Redbud.
Even
hydrangeas. You don't want to prune those beautiful blooms off. So you prune those in June or after they've flowered.
Mom, well done once again. You've heard this talked about, discussed on the growing season before, but because this is a pruning show, I would be remiss to not say, or I would be remiss, I have to say, after it blooms, then you can prune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Right?
Very simple rule.
So if it blooms in the spring, early spring, like the whole list that my mom just mentioned, a wonderful list, directly after it's finished blooming, is the absolute safest time to prune this. Now, what happens is, I have some listeners or customers that are like, but wait a second, everything's blooming at different times. Are you telling me that I got to get out there and prune everything individually? Yes!
Yeah.
You planted it!
I know.
Right? But for you to get out there and prune the, that's hard, Mom. Prune the blooms
that
off
is hard.
Of.
Let's say prune you just, the blooms.
Mom, pick me, let's say you're forsythia. For you to get out there and, well, you actually, you don't even have to prune a forsythia like that. But the point is, if it blooms early in the spring, let's say you have four or five shrubs that bloom early in the spring. Okay. When they're done, trim them.
Just wait. If you're going in through your weeding cycle, which you usually weed your gardens every 2 weeks, just make note of what's blooming.
Agreed.
And then when it's done, just prune it. Just prune it when you're weeding.
So if you are out in the garden and you're pruning away, Matthew, and you're doing that large tree, say on that one special spot on your property, you must remember that all those interior branches, those big scaffold branches, are the framework of that tree. They help protect it. So if you're going about and you're starting to trim some of these, always on a 45 degree angle so the water runs off, less bacteria, less disease. But here's a huge one. Be super careful when you're moving a new tree around, especially in the spring. That central leader is basically the brain of the tree. Yep. And it is there from because of, operating in that fashion yep. because of what hormone, Mashu?
Oxen.
Mashu.
Mashu.
Boy.
Yes, sometimes my dad wants to mash me, as in Mashu.
Anyway, what's the hormone?
Oxen.
Yep.
Perfect. Yep. Now, central leader.
Yep.
Dad? Garage okay, door. So no. Stop. Garage door story.
Yeah.
Go.
Okay. So I was working at Glen Echo Nurseries. This is going back in the, I believe, 80s.
No, 1800s, but that's fine.
1980s.
1880s.
And so anyways, they had sold, I guess it was a Tilia cordata Glenlavan. Okay. So a Glenlavan linden. And what happened was
great tree,
but 100 mil. Okay. So
big tree.
And that's 4-inch caliper, listeners. And they were taking this particular tree, or this particular guy was taking this tree to its new home. And when he backed up into the driveway, he clipped the garage and he broke the leader.
Okay, so if you break the central leader, this is akin to take your iPhone and remove the operating system, the iOS, on your iPhone. It's yep. just, it's a brick. It doesn't know what to do now. If you remove the central leader off the top of your Glenlavan linden,
that's what its brain is.
It's his brain. You're literally lobotomizing it.
Can
yes?
you fix this? Okay, number one, at the time, this tree is not something that you can leave on site. You would have to bring it back to the nursery and start over.
Dad, how much was that tree worth at the time?
At the time, that was around a $450 item. So yeah. what ended up happening?
It's about $800 now.
Matthew, and he went back to the nursery, picked up another tree, took it to this particular new home again.
100 mil again?
100 mil again.
Jeez.
Backed into the driveway, broke the leader again.
Ah!
So he just got so frustrated, he went back to the nursery. He said, I'm not doing this anymore. But anyways, you've got this broken leader on this particular tree, this linden. Is there anything that you could do to fix it so that it will grow into a beautiful tree on your property for the future?
Yes.
What is that, Mom?
Okay. Go for it.
What is it, Mom?
Okay, I'm going to give this a try. I'm not very knowledgeable about this, but correct me if I'm wrong. Wouldn't you take a fairly good-sized branch that stays growing
yep.
like near the central stalk and yep. tie it into yep. the leader place?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a brain transfer. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, now, I don't know how long. Yeah, brain transfer.
Couple years.
A couple years, and then it's kind of, it learns everything that the old leader knew, and yeah. it can yeah. guide yeah, the yeah, tree. Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, but it does leader. Things that's, but now when you do that, what happens is it does things its own way. It's like, well, you know what? Yeah. The last guy, his fall color was red. Forget that. I want yellow.
Pink. Yeah, yeah.
No, it actually doesn't happen. But what you would do is you would wire that branch up, straight up and down, to sort of match the orientation of the previous leader that Joe from Glen Echo snapped off twice.
It was actually Mark, but keep going.
But Mark snapped it off twice. Way to go, Mark. And you would use a bonsai wire would be good, some sort of a gauge wire that would allow this thing to stand straight up and down. But it's very similar to what we talked about leaving the wire and hose on too long. You don't want to leave this wire on there super long in that the cambium, the bark, can then begin to grow around the wire eventually years down the road. Now that wire is going to strangle out the operating system on this tree. Yeah?
Perfect. Yeah. So here you go. This one is again for Mom.
Oh, boy.
So
you know what? I quit. I'm out.
No, you're great at filling in the blanks. So here we are. We're out in the garden, and we have a lot of conifers on our property. And we happen to notice a sizable number of dead branches at the base. We're going along. We're going to prune those away. And we notice that the odd branch has a bit of green on the end. So is there anything that we could do to prune this stuff back without looking terribly ugly?
Okay, are you talking pom-poms?
Nope.
No, okay.
All right, so Matt, what I'm trying to get here is
using shears or something?
No, it's okay, how we prune on conifers. Everybody thinks that just like, you know how a deciduous tree works, you go and do a pruning and you get new branches and it keeps going, right? But in this case, on a conifer, even if you have just a little bit of life on the end of it, what happens is you cannot just go and prune this thing in 8-10 inches because you start getting into the negative zone, right?
Yeah, studs.
But in this case, on a conifer, if you do have this happen, do not prune it tight to the trunk itself. keep it out about a half to three, say three quarters of an inch, and create a little nub or almost like a nipple. I don't know if I can use a nipple, but anyways, nipple. And the idea is that what you want to end up happening is that this particular conifer needs a little bit of time to help to adapt to what you have just done to it. So take and leave this little bit of a nub at the very area.
It's called the branch collar.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Next to the branch collar. Oh, here's a huge one. If the temperatures are already quite warm in the spring, make sure that you never do any pruning when it's too hot. Why, Maddie?
If the temperatures... Oh, yeah. Okay. So you're talking like...
Let's say we got a beautiful day. It's 85, 90 degrees and it's in the spring.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we come along and say, oh, it's a great day to go out pruning. Yes or no?
So firstly, when it comes to conifers, cone-bearing organisms, and we all have seen these, whether they be spruce, whether they be pine, chamaecyparis, arborvitae, any of those ones that actually bear a small cone, a.k.a. evergreens, ladies and gentlemen. Okay?
Yep.
You'll see in the springtime, specifically, many of us have seen the Colorado blue spruce, for those interested in the Latin, Picea pungens glauca, and they put on this lovely, fluffy, brand new, almost, it looks, it looks like a Sesame Street level bluish cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
beautiful,
yeah.
and it's soft.
Wait a minute, what is the new growth called?
New growth.
On, you just talked about this lovely, fluffy growth on your conifer. Mom.
Candles?
A candle.
Okay, so it puts on these brand new candles from Bed Bath & Body Works.
Yeah.
Body Works.
Body Works.
We're really bad today.
It's awful. Okay. And they're very sensitive. If you begin going and pruning that off and it's really hot or sunny out, you can actually burn the tips. And we've seen it where it almost looks like someone's taken a blowtorch and sort of gone along and go tss, 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 on the tips of these, because that growth is so sensitive and so new, we're getting back into scorch here, right?
Yeah.
It's not used to this level of sunlight intensity
yet.
So you need yet. What happens is, in a very similar fashion to the seedlings that you have grown indoors, once they've become acclimated to the outdoor conditions, they're what they call hardened off. It's the exact same thing on your newly emerging conifer foliage. They get hardened off over a period of time. But pruning them, opening brand new wounds all over them, is not going to do what it's supposed to do with regards to hardening off. Dad.
Perfect. So what you want to have happen, listeners, is that you want to make sure that you only remove no more than a half, because what happens is you're going to lose all the growth that this tree is trying to put on. But Matt, we're out in the garden and it's been a very long spring, and you happen to notice your flowering shrubs are starting to look kind of a bit on the rangy side. So you go in there, you start pruning off, anything that looks really ugly, all the discolored, diseased branches and so forth, including suckers. You make sure that you clean up everything afterwards because you don't want to spread disease. But what you want to do when you're doing a cut is you want to cut at a node. And what is a node, Matt?
A node is an area where you would have adjacent growth.
No.
Yeah?
No. It's the space between two leaves. That's a node.
Oh.
Okay, very simple.
Isn't it that little...
You can't miss it, Matthew.
Bump.
You'll see it. It's like, oh, I'm not getting into why it's happening. It's something to do with meristem. But anyways, moving along.
Oh, my goodness. Do not do that.
No, I'm not doing that. So we've waited. We've had a long winter. And all of a sudden, our most favorite plant in our garden, which has got pricks all over. It actually prickles. And it's going to be giving us a lot of our floral show going through the season.
Roses.
35 million years, listeners, on Earth. So if you're going to tackle using roses.
Firstly, you pump the brakes for a second. Pants off, long way around, feet kicked up on the coffee table. Okay. We used to not specify roses much because whether it was Grandiflora, Floribunda, Hybrid Tea, those ones, the English, the British, the imported ones.
David Austin's
are kind of finicky. But now they've taken the classic Canadian native shrub rose and they've begun to blend it with all the old varieties, making roses way more of an attractive option for those that are not necessarily professional or seasoned horticulturalists.
No, like
right?
me.
Winnipeg roses. Parks is a great example.
Oh, so
these
good.
Suckers bloom for 8 to 10. Mom, we put those in. What time? When did we put those in last year?
Probably middle July.
When did they stop blooming?
I think like September, October.
You put them
did
in.
You have to prune them?
Yeah, you know what? I got in the habit of once the flower was spent, I pruned the hips off, and then it just seemed to encourage more blooming.
Was it really difficult to prune it?
No. I did it on my weeding cycle.
You know what, Matt? Not much black spot happening. We didn't have too many issues with the leaves and so forth. But Matt, anyways, here we come along. It's spring. We want to get this rose pruned up accordingly. Let's say that you have a very healthy rose and it's in the garden. Should you even bother touching it?
No.
No, don't touch it.
No.
And you got to understand that pick varieties, if you're going to go with, say, in the middle part of your bed or even to the rear of the bed, that's when you would use a taller rose like one of the grandifloras. But make sure that if you're going and doing any sort of pruning to this rose in the spring, it's all about mains and laterals. You want to explain, Mom?
Well, mains are the vertical canes that come up from the bottom of the plant.
Yep.
And the laterals are the horizontal ones, and it's on the laterals that the rose blooms. Now, if you start pruning the mains, the rose is going to exert all its energy into regrowing the mains, and you're not going to get a lot of flowers.
So then, okay, good. Hold on a second. Smarty pants, intelligent trousers.
She's been around us.
When would you prune the mains?
Well, if they're damaged.
Let's say we're not damaged. When do you prune the mains so that it doesn't affect anything else?
First thing in the spring before there's any leaf growth or flower.
Yep.
Okay.
If you had the time, let's say it's September-ish, and this thing is
winding down,
finished its blooming cycle, then you could do it. Ladies and gentlemen, here's what happens when it comes to pruning. Pruning is about being proactive. If you want to change the shape and form of your flowering shrub, that should be done directly after it has bloomed. You don't want to be doing that, let's say, the following spring when it's putting on its flower buds. All of this year's flower is affected by the decisions that you made last season, Mom.
Well, sometimes too, you'll find like in August, I know summer passed because we had a lot of rain at one point, you get these really long growth things called stringers. You prune those off.
Absolutely, yes.
But general rule of thumb, listeners, is that if the thing is already healthy, and unless there's the odd branches bugging the living tar with you,
damaged,
don't prune it.
That's it.
And
that's it.
Here's another one too, Matt. If you are doing pruning to this particular rose, you want to give it a little extra kick as when you're pruning. Yes, the auxins are helping to be the Band-Aid and help the plant heal and so forth. But you want to make sure you use a long-lasting fertilizer to help it out. And here's a big one, too. If that rose is in bloom and it's doing everything it's supposed to be, don't fertilize too much during the time that the blooms are on. People say, oh, it makes more blooms. Normally, response is, if the plant is already healthy, don't worry about pruning it or fertilizing it.
Mom, how many cats have you had in your life?
Oh, quite a few. I wouldn't know. I'd say 10 from
when I was
a kid.
The most vulnerable spot on the kitty is?
I would say their tummy.
Yeah, their tummy. So, for instance, we have a ragdoll cat, beloved ragdoll cat. In fact, we just got the invisible fence put in the backyard for the ragdoll cat because we don't want him getting into the backyard because he's so beloved. He is the most affectionate cat and loves to roll on his back and show you his tummy, which is ultimate trust.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah. Yeah.
When the rose is in bloom, it is the kitty showing you its tummy. Yes?
Yeah.
This is its most vulnerable state.
Yeah.
Right? So making sure that you're not doing a whole heck of a lot of pruning. If you are going to prune the old blooms off, just prune the blooms.
Yeah,
don't be messing with fertilizer too much. Let it do its thing. Yes?
Yeah, but you know, it seems so. I noticed on annuals. Okay, so an annual in a hanging basket. You see, that's a completely different thing. It's an enclosed environment and you're taking care of all of its needs. Therefore, it will need fertilizing. But Matt, here you got these really healthy roses on in your garden, and now you see that the verticals kind of look boring. So you kick over to a bramble rose or to a climbing rose. Are there any basic rules that you should follow when it comes to pruning roses in the spring?
Well,
climbing roses.
Climbing roses. Okay, so when it comes to the climbing rose, very, very, for me, it was always about prune as little as necessary. Yes?
Unless it's old.
Unless it's old. On a rose, you'll know that this mane, the scaffolding, the structure holding it up. You know it's dead if that mane is not green and it's this grayish brown, even the thorns on it look a little gray and sickly. That has to come out. But specifically on your climbing rose, what you want to make sure that you're doing is not pruning the manes as much as possible. Because, Mom, it's a climber.
Needs the manes.
Yeah, right?
Needs the manes.
It needs the manes to climb. And the climbing rose, Dad, the only difference between the climbing rose and the shrub rose is that the climbing rose just gets higher. Yes?
Yeah, it's been
there's
trained.
No, well, and there's no, it's not like a climbing hydrangea, or it's not like a any of the ivies that have these structures that allow it to sort of affix itself to a fence or an arbor or a trellis. The only difference between the climbing rose and your floribunda, grandifloras, or even your rose or your shrub roses is that these climbing ones just get taller. But you have to be tying these roses to the structure. You have to take care of all of that sort of how it's situated on the structure. So if you begin pruning the things that are allowing it to get tall, effectively all you've got here is just a shrub rose.
So listeners, what you will do is you will cut the side shoots that have flowered back to two buds from the main stem, and then you will tie in two or three strong shoots and remove anything that's really on the old side. And you can take this, and again, you can coppice this rose, especially in the early spring, down to ground level. But Matt, I'm not going to hit clematis. We can do almost a complete show on that, but Sorry, listeners.
Go for it. Let's hit something. Actually, if you're going to hit something, you got about 20 seconds, so get to hitting quickly.
Climbing honeysuckle. Are there any rules that you should follow when it comes to pruning your climbing honeysuckle?
Very, very easy rule. Don't plant them.
Why?
Because climbing honeysuckles, they get covered in aphid poop.
Yes.
Yeah. We used to use these things. They're absolutely, absolutely beautiful. That is a great place to press pause. We'll talk about the beauty and the unfortunateness of the honeysuckle. This is the growing season. Let me take this because we don't want there's a certain person who just gets super long-winded. We got to keep things tight. So honeysuckles.
Speak for yourself.
Yes. We do not use the honeysuckle, the climbing version anymore. We love it. There's nothing blooms like this. It's beautiful. The only problem is that it is an aphid attractor, and the aphids get on there and they love the sweet blooms and the whole thing, which then they proceed to defecate all over the leaves, and you've just got these leaves that just look this gray sheen of gross yucky.
It's too bad.
So we stop the pruning of this honeysuckle.
So you can reduce the shoots back by about what, 1/3?
Yeah, and it's basically for remember all the blooms are from side shoots from last season's growth. From that, what we would normally do, we would cut the flowered shoots back by, as you said, that 1/3. And remember, if the honeysuckle is in a particular area and it's getting crammed, it wants a little bit more space to grow.
Yeah.
And all you must remember, 2-3 buds, again, out from the main stem.
GrowingSeasonCanada.com is the website. That is the place to visit directly after this show airs. You heard me make mention of it 2 times before. I'll make mention of it for a 3rd. Watch and Listen is the place that allows you to watch and listen us. Huh? That's why I called it that. It's pretty fantastic. And again, focusing on the video segments on that page, the Weather Network stuff, we're going to be updating that consistently, guys. We always end the show in a very, very similar fashion. This week will be no exception. Now, this is quite a long setup, but it's great. You know you're drunk when you've got to swerve to avoid a pine tree in the middle of the road, only to realize it was the air freshener hanging from your rearview mirror.
You should never be driving that way.
Mom?
Till next time, have a good one, and please be safe.
Jack out.